Welcome to The Rock Play, where we speak our truth, slay sacred cows, and sometimes agree to disagree. This is an outdoor podcast that aims for the head. I'm Colin True, and today we are joined by the legendary gear junkie himself, Stephen Reginald, to talk about where we are these days with gear reviews and outdoor media. Things are quite different than they were when Stephen started his iconic gear review column and website, so stick around to hear this conversation. Before we get to that, have you subscribed to Rock Fight's newsletter, News from the Front? Each week, you'll get a recap of what has been happening in the RFU, along with a few special goodies you can't find anywhere else. Head to rockfight.co to sign up and ensure you get next week's issue. And all right, let's start the show. All right, we're joined today by Stephen Reginald of Gear Junkie fame, who is also the founding editor and advisor for Gear Junkie's current owner, which is All Gear Digital. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Colin, what's up?
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
I think our only face-to-face in the same room meeting was at like a breakfast at like Outdoor Retailer, probably in like 2015 or something like that. And I just got a text from, do you remember Darren Josie?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is Darren up to? Yeah, I haven't heard from that guy in a while.
He started his own company. He's called First Seed Sown. He actually came on to talk about, because he actually is advising like outdoor brands and stuff on their DEI efforts and working with like local municipalities.
Nice.
Yeah. He's doing some really interesting stuff.
Sweet.
Yeah. But hey, man, we're going to talk some gear review stuff, obviously. You know, so gear and gear reviews are just part of the fabric of the outdoor experience, I think, at this point. I also think it's important to kind of look back and take stock of why that is, because it wasn't that long ago, like we were talking about this before we hit record, that it wasn't a foregone conclusion that something would work as expected. You know, a good modern gear review means you learn something about a product that informs whether or not you'll buy it, right? But these days, I never go in to a modern gear review wondering if the thing is going to work as advertised. I just kind of assume that it will. But to start, I mean, your career has sort of bridged these time periods, right? So Gear Junkie started as a newspaper column back in 2002, which was definitely in the, hey, will this thing still work era. I mean, when you look back on the past 22 years, I mean, are you surprised at where we are today? I mean, do you miss those sort of grittier gear days?
Yeah, I think my head goes to kind of two lanes. It's like the media production audience side of this is my industry, and then kind of the product centric, like what's produced and what are the new products. And both lanes have changed dramatically. So yeah, on the media side, I started in my early 20s writing for newspapers fresh out of college, and it was kind of like a whiz bang, look at this new product, a few hundred words and a photo and move on, weekly, you know, syndicated column. And then the digital revolution of the early aughts and social media and UGC and YouTube and podcasts and newsletter and now AI, and it's been quite the, you know, maelstrom of change. And I've tried to lean into that. And then on the product side, it was scrappier back in the early 2000s, but you know, like your podcast a few weeks ago, things haven't changed a ton. Like hiking boots and backpacks are pretty similar. The materials have changed, the wearables, the kind of tech adjacent products have changed. But I think that honestly, like kind of the media landscape part of it has changed more than the product part for me.
So it's the kind of the delivery vehicle is really the big change. Because, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, if you're just sitting there, hey, I'm going to write a newspaper column. I'm going to start writing about this stuff that I just love. And as long as you had someone willing to publish those columns, you're kind of there, right? What else are you going to do in 2002, right?
I mean, you made me kind of think back. And when I was in high school English, I wrote some gear reviews for this assignment. And it was like ski, and I was a big skier. And so I wrote some ski kind of review. That was very proto gear junkie. And then in college, we did a zine, like black and white printed, you know, copy at a Kinko's or whatever. It was a rock climbing zine, Vertical Jones. And then I got a gig at a newspaper and we'd publish, you know, weekly print. And then we did blog and social and like podcast and like, anyways, yeah, the evolution has been wild. Like, how do you deliver this information on a product to an end consumer, a reader, a viewer, whatever it is? So constant change, you know, and now it's like I built a GPT called Gear GPT on ChatGPT, and it writes gear reviews for me. So gone from like scratching on my high school notebook to AI that writes me gear reviews. So it's been a crazy 20 years.
Was that zine mostly focused in like, you know, up in Baraboo, like was it Baraboo State Park and Devil's Lake State Park in Baraboo, Wisconsin? That's the big.
Oh yeah, that was one of. So I'm a Minnesota boy, so we're more.
I should have said that.
We're more attuned to, you know, head up to the North Shore of Lake Superior, ice climbing up in Nipigon, Canada.
Gotcha.
Like really cut my teeth on the frozen waterfalls of the Northland and the scrappy little crags. So yeah, all that stuff, and then drive out to Devil's Tower and do those road trips, and that was my life. And I took gear really seriously early on because I was kind of this, like, you know, wannabe extreme skier, like literally hitting whatever cliffs and chutes, and then somewhat serious climber. And gear in those two sports is, like, you know, literally life or death at times. So I did take the gear seriously and was just a dirtbag trying to scrap together a kit, too. So I needed the gear. Like, I mean, Vertical Jones was kind of a, you know, it's sort of a pseudo grift to get gear at discounted prices or free. And like, it's like, interesting, I can get some, you know, like that was, as a 19, 20 year old, that was, I had no other access to my ice axes and cams. I was poor. Like, so the motivations have also changed over the years. And then I went to journalism school and I learned the best practices of being an objective journalist and worked for the New York Times for 3 years and like really got very deep into like the ethics and then built Gear Junkie off kind of the back of that experience plus like, you know, tangible training in journalism.
Yeah, I have to sometimes check myself about coming off as, and maybe it's just hard because I'm like 48 now, so it's like I'm just turning into a curmudgeon and like look always looking back and commenting on the way things used to be. I think we just all do that probably as we get older because it's one thing to look back and be like, oh, you know, this is the way it was then versus the way it is now. I mean, I think it's objectively better now. I mean, look what I just said. Like, things work now. like, and we expect them to work. And then, to your point, what you're talking about, like, you know, scrapping things together for a kit. I mean, I remember being, like, not angry, but definitely, like, didn't like the fashion adoptions of, like, outdoor stuff, right? Like, that was how I wanted to be recognized. I wanted to have a North Face Nupsi on and have someone look at me and be like, oh, that guy goes outside, right? I didn't want, like, you know, the guys on MTV to have on, like, Timberlands and North Face stuff because, like, that was what... But then, as it, you know, and as with all things, as we've gone on and sort of, like, we're able to find our community a little bit easier with the advent of the internet and things like that, it's good that it's not... That judgment isn't kind of dissipating. I mean, even things like, I look at my kids and pop culture and, you know, I'm sure your generation was the same. Like, I would discount the music from, like, 10, 20 years when I was a kid. Like, stuff from the 70s was like, ugh, screw that. You know, now... You know, my daughters are listening to anything from any era, and it's just music. And I feel like there's probably a little bit of that happening in the outdoors as well. It's just easier to kind of recognize, you know, someone else. It's not a bad thing where we've ended up, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, kind of this mainstreamification of gear and these brands, too. And that really buoyed the media company I built. Gear Junkie was scrappy, and the industry was smaller and scrappier. And then as the Hydro Flasks and Yeti coolers of the world and, you know, numerous other brands came to mass popularity, both kind of in the outdoor endemic space, but also mass consumer culture. The kind of budgets opened up to do bigger ad deals. The personalities became, bigger names. Kind of the mainstream movement, it had its, you know, good and bad, like anything, but now it's like, yeah, an average guy walking in Manhattan has an Arc'teryx jacket on and you don't think twice. So
right.
I think it does trickle from, like, it's good product too, you know, like merino shirts and whatever the footwear and the outerwear and like this stuff you need to kind of be comfortable and, you know, sometimes survive in places like Minneapolis and Manhattan and whatever, like, It's better gear. The brands are better products, and some of these, you know, formerly endemic brands have leaned into that and said, "Let's sell our down jackets and our Canada Goose, you know, parkas to the everyday consumer and to huge financial reward as well."
Well, that's a good segue into, you know, like, because as sort of innovation kind of mellowed out, things are more reliable. I mean, there was this sort of cottage industry of gear reviewers and publications that were all about gear that kind of sprung up. I mean, you guys pioneered it, but we kind of achieved this place where we stopped asking questions like, what is this thing solving? and sort of took for granted that we just needed to make more stuff and kind of review it because that, and it's broadly speaking, that's just kind of now what we do. So I look at a good gear review as almost like it's sort of its own art form. Like, how do you sort of hook someone, relate to them, make them understand what, even if they're not maybe in the market for something, when they kind of walk away learning something about it, whether it's, you know, something I would like to buy or what something is, or maybe something that I'm informed now where I wasn't before. So sitting in 2024, like, what do you look for today in a gear review? Like, what's a good gear review today, maybe versus, you know, back when you started?
I mean, a macro change for better or worse is you need, if you're a digital publisher, you need to write for the algorithm to an extent, and you can certainly overdo that. But if you simply don't kind of have the playbook to write for Google, you will not get visibility, you will not get distribution. So that has kind of like cookie cuttered a lot of review content now, and the Wirecutter and some of these sites pioneered this, and then there's a million iterations. So the best of type template is kind of gross, but it's also like, it happens to be what most of humanity, when they sit down at a keyboard and wants a new pair of hiking boots, they type best hiking boots. And so that's one angle. Like, you just need to kind of play in the field that you're given. And for things like Gear Junkie, that means doing world-class content, but within the structure of 10 best hiking boots. Whereas in the past, we leaned a lot more into single reviews of a new Timberland or a Merrell or a Keen boot. We still do that, but the consumer, the reader, wants it aggregated in one place. They're used to marketplaces like Amazon and stores like REI, where they see it all on the shelf. Providing that in kind of a subject matter expert editorial lens is the current playbook. And then we do a weekly column called Emerging Gear, and it's kind of the classic like new products column. It's a couple hundred words and a picture of, you know, 6 to 10 new products that are cutting edge. And that's not necessarily a review, but it's product coverage, and it serves its function of kind of staying on the pulse of the industry. What is design? What are the new materials? What are the trends? So those are two kind of ends of the spectrum, maybe. And then in the middle, I mean, there's all sorts of middle, but there's more of a macro UGC movement across the web over the last 10 years. It's less like here's some hoity-toity editor telling you. It's more like crowdsourced reviews and Amazon stars and social media. So in some ways, I think publications like Gear Junkie have leaned into that. I've kind of done that for a long time, just first person, straight up, like straight dope kind of opinion and thoughts on something. So a few thoughts,
You're talking made me think of this, like, when you mentioned, like, kind of most the you know, the person who's going to look for something and, like, the best of, or, you know, and I had a question about listicles, because they kind of seem like they're just, it's gear reviews have almost become listicles in some regards. But that's coming from my lens, right, as someone who was there kind of when you were doing your thing at the beginning to now, and, you know, maybe I'm applying a little too much of, like, my purest way of thinking what a gear review should be. And you're talking about a Gear Junkie now that has, you know, millions of uniques, you know, clicks every month. You know, your audience must be, you must have to consider your audience as broader at this point, I would imagine, right? I can't, do you see that you're producing content at Gear Junkie for the sort of educated, like, you know, the person in the know in the industry? Or is it like, no, you guys are fine. We need to appeal to the broader audience. Cause like I've talked about a lot too. It's like the hardcore outdoor doesn't really exist anymore. Right. You said it's like the dog walker in New York City is just as much of an outdoors person who might have some of these questions and the resources to get answers as, you know, someone who wants to go like, you know, go to like spend a weekend at Ouray. Right. And so it's a, I don't know, how do you guys kind of balance that out?
It is a balance because you need to cover the core and make sure you're on trend and kind of the zeitgeist if you want to be a voice in your space, if you want to be relevant. But there's also this massive humanity that just needs a water bottle or a pair of hiking boots for the weekend. So yeah, it's a balance. And I think 70% of our readers come from search, and that means they are intent on learning something, whether it's, you know, 10 great hikes in upstate New York or best hiking boot. So we write to those people that are searching for those kind of answers and information. And then 30% of the audience is more core, more invested, interested. They follow our social media. They get our e-newsletter.
Right.
They might type in gearjunkie.com to come see what's up. So we do write to both those audiences.
What about things like, there's been a huge, and I'm not that informed on this, but just like things like affiliate links and then even just sponsored content, right? So because if you go on even gearjunkie.com right now, and you guys are calling things out if it's sponsored, but like, what is your expectation of the engagement of like sponsored content? Is it kind of like, hey, listen, it's all good information on the website. We just need to make sure you understand that like this was not something that we conceived of originally. Is it a, you know, like those two topics, like how, you know, I definitely understand affiliate links. That makes actually just good business sense, right? Listen, click this link on this thing we're talking about and we might get a kickback for that. That just kind of like, okay, that makes sense. That's just good, maybe capitalism. But on the sponsored content side, is there a too much or not enough kind of like balance you need to strike in terms of how that appears to someone visiting the site?
Yeah, we have some hard lines. I mean, we're not pay to play for gear reviews. If there's a company that has a new initiative around whatever DEI or a new technology that they want to highlight, and we can do that in an advertorial type sense and build that a piece of content around that, we will do that occasionally. But we don't do paid gear reviews. So I think that's the hard line. We're not going to say something's good because someone's paying us for it. But we will say you can reach our audience. That's part of our business. We can highlight what you're doing. It's going to be labeled as such.
Right.
I always say growing up, you know, you're flipping through National Geographic and it says paid advertorial and it says 10 great hikes in Peru. It's like, it's just that, but in a digital format.
Right. I mean, are we also then in a place where like are we at a feed the beast kind of place where now it's become such a thing and such an entrenched like part of the outdoor media scene where it's like, we just have to continue to have more gear content regardless of what it is?
I don't know if I don't know if the sort of volume of gear content has changed. If that's the question, like we being kind of the editorial staff at Gear Junkie, we get up every day and look at press releases and news feeds and social media and try to find the stories. And I don't feel like the cadence of that has changed dramatically. There was kind of this period of like the Kickstarter revolution of crowdsourced startups and different cottage industries that, you know, like say the SUP board revolution of like the late 2010s or whatever. Like there's been little sparks, but for the most part, there's, you know, as you know, you go to the OR show or anything like that, and there's kind of 30 to 50 brands that sort of buoy the industry, and they come out with new products at sort of a seasonal cadence. And
right.
In some ways, that hasn't changed too much in the last, you know, 20 years, I would say.
It's so funny. We talk so much on, like, the trade shows. You mentioned that, like, when, you know, when you mentioned OR and, like, the stand-up paddleboard thing, I can't but help but think about that kind of 2015, 16 time frame where they had, like, their own freaking tent. Like, it's just like here's the paddle tent now, you know? and now that it's such a weird world, like where the trade shows have ended up. I mean, how much has that impacted you guys? I mean, it's got to be a little impactful, right? Because that was one nice thing, especially if you're focused on gear, to say, hey, here's the two times a year where everybody's here. And guess what? They have all their new stuff. Come see it. And now it's a little
convenient.
More, yeah.
Pretty convenient. I mean, yeah, we built this whole program, Best in Show, the awards around, you know, two or sometimes three times a year OR would happen. And we also started giving out that award at CES and other shows. And we have an auto editor and he gives out awards. So the award thing kind of focused us on like, what is the cutting edge at these trade shows that are saturated with new products? What are the 10 standout items that we can say this is a best in show? And yeah, that rubric doesn't exist as much. We go to the shows, we give out awards, but you know, Patagonia is not there, and a lot of innovative companies are not there. A lot of the big guys are not there. So you end up awarding the startups and the scrappier companies, which is also kind of cool. But the press releases still come. The embargoes are still there. We see creative briefs. We see campaigns. A lot of it hasn't changed, even though the trade shows have diminished.
Is there anyone that's doing it remotely? Bob, do you have any like? Hey, in the future, like big gear is going to crush it, or is it sort of, it just feels to me we're in this like holding pattern, and I'm actually going to get a chance to go to GOA Connect, the Grassroots Outdoor Alliance. They have their retailer show. And I was talking with their organizers, and you look about how that is laid out and who's there and the format. So from that they go through, and from a trade perspective, I'm like, this is all you need, right? It's all the most relevant brands. It's the most relevant retailers minus the independent retailers, right? And business gets done here. Now, I do think there's still, where's that sort of OIA rendezvous kind of opportunity where you can like have the industry to get together? Maybe there's product on display so you can bring media in to kind of see things. But do you see any sort of light at the end of the tunnel for kind of the, I guess, the trade show sort of, you know, vacuum we've been living in the past 4 or 5 years?
I don't know about the outdoor industry in general, but I can speak about trade shows in general, maybe, I've seen more innovation beyond kind of this area. You know, I just got back yesterday from Chicago, a little regional show about affiliate commerce, and it was like 100 people, and it's like 100 people that every single person you meet is a connection that's valuable, and the sessions are short and punchy, and you kind of get what you want. It's not at all a consumer show. It's not really a media show. It's like a conference. And so, you know, I work more on business development, sales, partnerships. That's more my lens nowadays. So that to me is very valuable. So it goes back to who's going to the show, what are they doing? If it's consumers, it's one thing. If it's editors looking for best in show awards, you know, something like a CES is amazing. So
right,
there's that still exists, that those big splashy shows with laser beams and press conferences still happen. They just don't happen in our industry. And they don't happen because a lot of that has become just kind of irrelevant with things like Zoom and social media and everything that's come to light over the last few years.
You know, as you look ahead, though, like, what's the criteria you would like to see in the future? What are the changes you want to see coming, and maybe we may see eventually come on something like Gear Junkie?
Are you talking about the product or kind of the review?
Yeah, reviews, product. I mean, all the above, right? I think things do feel a little stagnant. I kind of feel like in the outdoor media space, probably the gear space, a lot of same out there. So, what would you like to see? What do you expect to see in the future?
I guess I don't feel like things are stagnant necessarily. There's a lot of energy. Say if you look at, and I'm talking beyond Gear Junkie, but say look at YouTube. Like if you want a review of an ultralight backpack utilized on the Pacific Crest Trail by some core dude that hiked with it 3 months, I'm pretty sure that's on YouTube. So,
oh, it definitely is.
Yeah, so as one minor example. So I think discoverability is a little difficult. Like the kind of everything you want is out there in this giant world of content now, whether that's a Substack or a TikTok or a YouTube or a article on Gear Junkie. So the challenge is maybe aggregating that better, and whether that's like a media job or a tech platform job, I'm not really sure, because everything is so chaotic at the moment. And we were looking at a tool called vetted.ai recently, and it's kind of like a gear review, product review AI. So things are going there. I don't love that as like a human, but as like a potential consumer of, like, I think that there's all sorts of new technologies that will change this landscape. And I'm an optimist. And I think hopefully the arc goes towards like quality and usability and a lot of information. It's just kind of like you need to know, if I'm setting my AT, like what skin fits this ski or something. You don't need to read 1,000 words. It's like, just give me the info. So there's a lot of utilitarian info that I think like bots will handle in a great way, whether it's voice or some text tool.
Yeah.
And then on the other end of the spectrum, it's like just deeper connection to personalities that know their stuff and can give you kind of the straight up. So
I think the biggest shift is going to be, and I think like this is still relevant to our conversation, is just the because of all that, because of the choices, and we're seeing it in podcasts too, and like how many shows are out there and how many are good versus bad, or does it even matter? You know, it's the smaller audience is going to become more valuable. I feel like there is something for everybody out there, and you're able to kind of, you know, curate to your own taste, no matter what it's about. If maybe, you know, I might find the 30-minute POV mountain bike video, like, annoying. It's like, well, what am I seeing here? Great, you're still going downhill. Like, I'm not getting anything from this video. Someone else might think that's awesome. And maybe they're pausing it and taking notes because they're going to ride that trail tomorrow, you know? And it's so easy to kind of maybe wave off, like, ah, well, that's just not good. It's like, someone's going to listen to that or someone's going to watch that. It's kind of incredible the era we're entering into here.
Yeah, you got to find that hyper-personalization, but somewhat at scale. Otherwise, you just don't have a business there. And that's also like a question, like, are you trying to build a media business or just do content? Because your competition as a media company is just UGC, user-generated content, whether that's Instagram, YouTube, anything else. It's like most people enjoy interfacing with other people in their community. These are some tools. And then us media folks are like, yo, let's jump in there too. But these are like UGC first platforms. And so that's where the energy is and that's where the competition is in some ways. So if, you know, Joe Mountain Biker has 800 views on his 30-minute stream, he's like psyched. If Gear Junkie invests a big thing and we get 800 views, we're like, oh, that doesn't work.
That doesn't work, right.
I think a really interesting like inflection was Wirecutter. And, you know, 2012 or 14, I can't remember, but Brian Lamb started Wirecutter. And he kind of took this model of detailed, you know, 3,000-word product reviews at a time when, like, listicles and BuzzFeed and billions of video views on Facebook were kind of like the operative, like, you know, the trendy thing to do in media was to get scale. Mm-hmm. And to be brief and be fun. Wirecutter went the other way. And things like DC Rainmaker and, you know, later things like Gear Junkie. So there was this kind of like moment of inflection around going deep on quality when the world had shifted to like very superficial, listicle type of a landscape. And then what happened also is like at that same time, this affiliate industry began to get more mature. So all of the brands leaned into affiliate networks and publishers could find this whole new revenue stream by adding links. It's essentially lead gen to a retailer. So someone's reading about an REI, something sold at REI, they click from Gear Junkie, and if there's a sale made, we get a cut of that. And so it incentivizes Gear Junkie to add these links. It can also incentivize brands to be gray hat about it and promote things that are maybe not the best product, but they know we'll get links and clicks. And so that created tension, but also opportunity. And at that same time, there was just this huge UGC revolution with, like we were talking about, YouTube and all the social media and all these kind of, you know, amateur gear reviewers who, I'm not saying that negative because some of them are amazing, but they're doing it for free. And so now all of a sudden media is competing with everybody that wants to talk about their favorite gear online. And, you know, it continues, like the kind of craziness continues to this day with all the algorithm updates, Google Eat, HCU, generative AI, like it just goes on. So from my view as like a media person in the gear review space, the operative thing has been to stay nimble and to just be like audience centric and try to produce objective content that is usable, and hopefully that can kind of keep you relevant and authentic for the long term.
So last two things I want to ask you. Number one, I think did you go see, I have not seen it, but have you watched Arthur the King as an adventure racer? Did you go see it?
Oh man, I haven't seen it yet, but it's on the list here.
Are you excited to see that just because it's a movie about adventure racing?
Oh yeah. Mark Wahlberg wearing a backpack out in the jungle. Yeah. So Gear Junkie actually broke that story years ago. We were in that race and our team, I wasn't there, but some of my editors. And
it's based on a true story, right?
I think the movie is set in like the Dominican Republic. The actual race was in, I believe, Ecuador. It was South America. And our team was racing with the dog. So we have a special connection to that film.
Okay, that makes more sense.
And we're leaning in, though. We're doing a big, to be announced, but a big deal with adventure racing later this year. So it's a sport close to home.
And I guess last thing I want to ask you is, and this is a really kind of lame question, but you've probably been asked this a lot, but in 22 years of gear reviews, Do you have a desert island all-time favorite product? Is there one that you point to and you're like, that's the one? And it could be what it means to Gear Junkie. It doesn't have to be like even the performance of the product. Maybe it's, so there's another reason. But is there one thing that you hold up like this is
I guess if I had to say one, it'd be the buff, which I've said for years. Like I use a buff like every day of my life. And I wore one today. Like it's a little windy, so I put one on my neck. But yeah, a buff is like, I discovered it in like 2004 or five, and I was like, what is this thing? And I literally have not put it down since. So I've always got a few on my person. When my kids are cold, they're like, give me a buff. And I'm like pulling one off my ankle. So I would say the buff if I have to pick one product.
That's a good one. Yeah, I wonder if, they still feel like they're riding like the survivor bump of like the early 2000s, you know?
Never let go of that. Yeah, but they're so dang usable, like 365, like any weather, you kind of need it. So that's kind of, I think my second would be like merino wool t-shirts and merino boxers and like, that has just been like always on my body since kind of merino came out. It's just such a great fabric in all regards. So that would be maybe number two.
Yeah, to any, I assume women as well, but definitely men. Like if you ever put on a pair of like good merino, like, you know, boxer briefs, just be prepared to drop a few $100 a year on boxer briefs because
it's kind of sad.
They're not as bomb proof maybe as other things typically. Right. But it's awesome. It's the best. Even in hot weather, it's the best.
I asked Jeremy Moon of Icebreaker, the founder, like, what is it with merino? Like, it's just kind of this magic, like, almost energy. It just, I'm not trying to get woo-woo, but it just feels good on the body.
Yep.
And he had the best answer. He said it's because every other material you wear is based on either synthetic or plant, like cotton and so forth. Merino is the base of the kind of that fabric is keratin, which I believe is like a protein, which is very, like, it's essentially hair.
Right.
Which you already have hair on your body, so it's very natural feeling.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like his, physiological explanation as to why merino feels good, and I've always kind of carried that with me.
All right, man, we can wrap it up there. Anything to promote? Anything? So you got a big announcement on Adventure Racing coming up soon. What else we got going on over at Gear Junkie, or even at All Gear? Anything new at All Gear to promote? Any cool new brands?
Yeah, I came on to All Gear a couple of years ago. We raised some money, made a bunch of acquisitions. We just acquired Pack Hacker, which is in the portfolio now. It's a site out of Detroit that covers travel gear and packs, so it's another kind of core property. So I would say if the audience hasn't checked out the portfolio of kind of sister sites to Gear Junkie, we now own Switchback Travel, Bike Groomer, iRunFar, Explorer's Web, The Inertia, Pack Hacker, and I think I'm missing something. So we have this suite of really amazing brands and people underneath those brands that care about their audience are objective gear reviewers, journalists. So it's a great organization. And yeah, sign up for all the socials and e-news if you want a deluge of gear information from All Gear Digital.
Right on, man. Well, appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Colin. That was fun.
All right, that's the podcast for today. What did you think about this episode of The Rock Fight or any episode of The Rock Fight? We want to hear from you. Please send an email to myrockfight@gmail.com. We want to hear from you. Send your emails over. The Rock Fight is a production of Rock Fight LLC. I'm Colin True. Thanks for listening. And here to take us out, it's Krista Makes with the Rock Fight fight song. We'll see you next time, Rock Fighters. Rock Fight!